Hej og velkommen til. Det er mig, der hedder Henrik Vestergaard. Og ved I hvad, I tror måske nok, at det er mig, der skal holde sessionen i dag, men jeg har faktisk fået fat i Craig Kitterman, som er program manager på Azure-teamet i Redmond. Og jeg tænker, det er langt bedre at høre ordene fra hestens egen mund. Så without further ado, please welcome Craig Kitterman.
Great, thank you. All right, can you hear me okay? All right. Thanks for coming today. Good afternoon. I apologize, the session's going to be in English. My Danish is a little bit rusty, meaning non-existent, so I'll try to be articulate, and hopefully that works for everyone in the room. Again, my name's Craig Kitterman. I'm a senior product manager in the Windows Azure business in Microsoft Corporate in Redmond, in the United States. And today I want to just give you a general overview of the Windows Azure platform, what it is, what we're trying to build, and how we think about the cloud and the public cloud in particular. And then I'll show you a couple of quick demos, and then I'd like to open it up for some questions and answers at the end of the session. If you're intimately familiar with Windows Azure already, or if you've been using it, you're probably going to be kind of bored, so I won't be offended if you leave the room, because this really is intended to be an introductory session to help those who haven't used the platform or who don't have intimate familiarity with the platform to get an overview. So let's get started. So when we build Windows Azure, we really have sort of three fundamental core principles that we're operating against as we execute the development of the platform and as we go to market with it. And it starts with being flexible. Flexibility is about giving customers the ability to build hybrid solutions that span existing infrastructure investments and the public cloud, being able to build complex applications that have multiple tiers, and really do so in a way that uses best-of-breed technology and spans multiple different premises. And really, the next piece is about openness. Openness is about letting application owners, developers, use the tools and processes that they're familiar with. Use the languages, runtimes that they like to use. We're not going to force anyone into a particular tool chain or a particular language or runtime. So building an open and interoperable cloud. The last one is what we call rock solid. This is about making an enterprise-grade platform that you can trust to run your most mission-critical workloads. If you can't trust the public cloud to run mission-critical workloads, then the value goes down tremendously. And so we really need to emphasize this point and in every part of the platform ensure that we have built everything to be rock solid. It all starts with our global infrastructure. So at the heart of Windows Azure is a series of 8 different data centers distributed throughout the world that operate all of the underlying machines that power our public cloud platform. Now, this global infrastructure is run by a group within Microsoft called Microsoft Global Foundation Services, or GFS. And the reason that matters is that Microsoft GFS has had the benefit of running continuous 24/7 connected services for the better part of 2 decades. So when you think about MSN, you think about Hotmail, Bing, and now things like Office 365. This is the same group who has had to build out the infrastructure and the operational excellence to ensure that those services are always up and always on. And so we get to take advantage of that with Windows Azure, and as a user of Windows Azure, as a customer of Windows Azure, you get to take advantage of that too. So you now have a world-class data center group that's actually powering your infrastructure. So those data centers I mentioned are distributed throughout the world. We have 4 in North America, 2 in Asia, and 2 in Europe. We'll continue to expand in the future into various different parts of the world. We also have 26 CDN nodes. So if you see the green dots here on the map, those represent nodes where we have content distribution caches. And so if your applications have content in them that are that is bandwidth intensive, so images, videos, other types of large documents, you can take advantage of the CDN network to actually edge cache that content. And that's a very simple operation. You simply set up Windows Azure Storage. You store all that content in Windows Azure Storage, and then you go into the management portal and enable CDN, and it will automatically do the replication for you out to all these CDN nodes. And at the end of the day, what that means is that users who are distributed around the world are going to have a great experience with very low latency accessing that content. So we'll talk a little bit more about those types of services a little bit later. So again, this operational excellence around data center management allows us to deliver a 99.95% SLA. And this SLA is financially backed. So if you deploy infrastructure into Windows Azure, you're actually running applications on our platform, and there's an issue or a problem, something happens, there's a failure with Windows Azure that brings your application down, you'll actually be reimbursed for the time that your application was down. So it's a financially backed SLA. This SLA is in effect when you take advantage of multiple instances of your application. So that means you have to have a little bit of redundancy built in to ensure that if there's a hardware failure or something underlying one of your instances, the application will stay up. And I'll show you how that works in a few minutes. But as long as you're deploying at least two instances of your application, you can take advantage of this full 99.95% SLA. And as a user of the platform, I hope that means that you'll be able to pass on an even better SLA to your customers, but have fewer headaches in doing so, meaning Microsoft's doing all the heavy lifting to enable this this high availability, and you'll have to do less of that work in the future. One of the other core tenets of cloud computing is about paying only for what you use. And what I mean by this is, let me submit that an idea here, that no application owner has ever perfectly predicted the load on that application, the demand for that application, the usage patterns. Unless, of course, maybe it was zero, and then maybe you accurately predict it. But if you have an application that people actually want to use, you probably don't know exactly what resources are required. How much CPU is required to service those users on a Tuesday afternoon? How much RAM is required? All of those things are sort of unknown. How much storage is required for so many users? How is that going to grow over time? You can sort of make estimates, and you have to do that in today's world. But with the cloud, you get elasticity. And so those estimates don't have to be perfect. And in the old world, if you guessed wrong, you had one of two problems. If you guessed wrong and over-provisioned, you put too many resources, you put this application on a bunch of hardware because you thought you were going to have a huge demand at the beginning, and then it turns out the demand was a little bit slower than you anticipated. The result of that is a bunch of unutilized hardware sitting there that you already paid for. Now, the opposite problem is actually even worse, which is you underestimate. You have a great business. Your growth is way ahead of forecasts, and the demand for your applications or services is skyrocketing. And you've underutilized hardware resources to service the users of your application. Now you've got a problem where users are going to try to access your application, and they're not going to have a great experience. They're either going to have a failure, or they're going to have a really slow, terrible user experience. So you're either losing revenue, or you're creating bad customer satisfaction problems. So that's also not a problem that people really want to deal with. So the beauty of elastic public cloud resources is that you can scale them up and scale them down as required, and pay only for when you're using them. So we have a couple of customers, for example, who crunch data. They're in the financial market. And in order to crunch the numbers that they're doing for the financial markets, they need a lot of computing power to do that. So every night after the markets close, they spin up something like 10,000 cores to crunch their data in parallel. And they spin those up, they crunch the data in parallel, and then they shut them down after 4 or 5 hours. So you could imagine in the old world, they would have had to buy 10,000 machines that sat idle for 20 hours a day and then were running for 4 hours a night crunching this data. Well, now they can effectively run those machines for 4 hours a night and only pay for that 4 hours. So what now costs them a few dollars would have cost them, tens of thousands of dollars over the course of a year. So that's the idea of this elasticity, and this is a very, very important tenet in public cloud. So now let's talk about the first type of cloud offering that we have on Windows Azure, which is platform as a service. And our platform as a service offering is called Cloud Services. Now, Windows Azure has been out for about 3 years, and we started with just a platform as a service model. Platform as a service gives you a lot of great benefits. The first one is it allows you to build infinitely scalable applications and solutions. There is a downside, there is a trade-off, there's a price. And the price is you have to actually architect your applications in a specific way in order to get this benefit. You have to build stateless applications that are storing data in a storage system that's not on the virtual machine itself. You know, so you're not writing a lot of things to local storage. You're writing things to cloud storage or elsewhere. There's some other characteristics of these types of architectures. And so developers need to be aware of what those architectural constraints are, and they need to implement them in order to get this great elasticity and horizontal scalability. So that's sort of the price you have to pay. And what it turns out that works very well for new applications, for net new applications, because you can sort of plan ahead and build applications that are optimized for platform as a service to get all this great capability. But for existing applications that are already running, they're running well, our customers have told us that this isn't the best solution for them. So there's some trade-offs there. But in this case, for new applications, it works very, very well. Windows Azure Cloud Services supports rich multi-tier architectures. So it's not just a single web app with a database or a couple of worker processes. You can have very complicated multi-tier applications and deploy those in unison using our deployment model. And we have a model that has a staging container and a production container, and so you can deploy everything into staging, test it out, and do an instantaneous swap into production. So there's some great capability there for doing these complex deployments in a very straightforward way. And last but not least, we have automated application management, some automated application monitoring capability. And I want to show you a little bit how this all works. So when you deploy an application into Windows Azure Cloud Services, you'll get from your developer what's called a service package. So once the application's been developed, it's been tested, and the developer's ready to deploy, they'll come to the deployment manager and say, okay, here you go, here's this file. And it's a single file. Actually, it's two files. One of them is the file that contains all of the code for the application, and one of them is a configuration file. And these files are effectively just glorified zip files. So inside they have all the appropriate code files, all the binaries that are required, and some XML data that describes a manifest for the package and all that. So you can actually rename the package file .zip and take a peek inside and see what that looks like. But it's basically just a glorified zip file that has all of this stuff contained within it. So you take those files and you upload them to Windows Azure through the Windows Azure Management Portal. And Windows Azure first looks at the configuration file, because the configuration file describes to Windows Azure how to actually go run that application. What are the dependencies for the application? How many instances of the application does Windows Azure need to set up? What are the endpoints for that application? How are users going to access it? Is it a web app? Do we need to open up port 80 for this application? Is it a SQL app? We need to open up some other port or something else, or a custom port that you're using for some other type of workload. So all of that is described within the configuration file. So Windows Azure knows how to configure the compute resources, the underlying virtual machines, as well as the network infrastructure. So in this case, let's say we have a simple web application, and I want 4 instances of it. So this is my first best guess of how my traffic's going to be for this app, and I want 4 instances. So in my config file, I have a value that says instances of 4. So when Windows Azure reads that configuration file, it's going to go look across the data center and find 4 virtual machines for me that aren't being used and spin those up. It's going to image them with the latest version of the underlying OS image that is fully controlled and managed by Microsoft, and it's going to get them ready for me. The next stage is it's going to take my application code from that zip file, and it's going to image that onto each of those virtual machines in a very consistent way. So what you have at the end of the day is a brand new clean virtual machine with your application code imaged on top of it And it's exactly the same across all four of those instances. So you can have perfect confidence that all of those instances of your app are going to behave the same. But it's not done. The magic isn't finished. So the next piece is it sets up load balancing. It says we have four instances of this app. Let's bring up each of those VMs, collect their IP addresses, and set them up on a load balancer. So all incoming requests for this application URL at port 80 are going to get routed across all of these instances of the application. Now, in the Windows Azure portal, I can monitor my application and see how it's doing relative to my expectations. I can see what the CPU load is on my instances. I can see what memory utilization looks like. I can see if I'm going to need more instances of that application to service the traffic that's coming in. And if I need more, all I need to do is go into the Windows Azure Management portal and drag a slider from 4 up to whatever, let's say 10. Let's say I need 10 instances based on what I'm seeing. Or I know that we're just about to go out with a press release and we're going to get a big influx of traffic for our site. So I can simply go do that, and Windows Azure will provision 6 new virtual machines in the exact same way that you saw here, bring them up, image them, and as soon as they're ready, it will add them to the load balancer. So new traffic will get load balanced across all 10 instances, not just the 4. And when that traffic dies back down, I can go drag that slider bar back over and reduce the load. Now, sorry, this is crackling a little bit. Maybe it's just touching me. Thank you. So the nice thing is that in addition to going into the Windows Azure portal, moving that slider bar, noticing that things are better and moving it back down, that's nice if you want to stare at the management console all day and watch the graphs go up and down. You can also set up another monitoring system. You can use System Center, or you can set up your own monitoring solution and use our service management APIs to check on the health of your application and see all of those things and set it up to scale up or down. There is something called the Wasabi block, and Wasabi stands for something, and I can't remember what it is. It's an application scaling block. So the Microsoft Patterns and Practices team has put out a piece of code that can help you set up an infrastructure for setting up automated scaling of your applications. So now we talked a little bit about deploying an application and monitoring an application. What happens if something fails? So, you know, most of you are IT professionals, and you've probably had a hardware failure at some time or another. And if you had a hardware failure on a production application, you know what a headache that can be, especially if it happens on a weekend or at night when you're trying to sleep. You know, your phone rings, or, you know, back in the day we had pagers, you know, beep, and that's a real headache. With Windows Azure and cloud services, if you have an underlying hardware failure, Windows Azure will fix that for you without even notifying you. So let's say, for example, one of our instances was running on a machine that had a hard disk failure, or the switch in the rack that virtual machine was running on, all of a sudden the transformer blew up. Okay? That's going to take one of the instances offline. Well, because Windows Azure is monitoring constantly the health of all of those instances, it's going to recognize instantly that one of those instances is offline, and it's going to take it off the load balancer and immediately provision a new virtual machine, re-image it with the code that you had already uploaded in your service package, and then put that back on the load balancer. So all of that happens for you automatically while you're enjoying the evening with your family or sleeping or whatnot. And so hard drive failures are no problem. Switch failures are no problem. That's all automated. So at the end of the day, it allows you to focus on the application and not the infrastructure. You don't have to worry about patching and upgrading operating systems. You don't have to worry about, you know, service updates. You just make sure that the application is doing what it's supposed to do. Is the business logic correct? Are all the test cases there? And you can work with your developers on hardening that application and not having to worry about the underpinning of all of these other OS details and hardware details. That's all handled for you. Okay, so this is the cloud services model. Back in June of this year, we announced a new service called Windows Azure Websites. Windows Azure Websites is, you could sort of consider it like a platform as a service, or platform as a service light, maybe, because it's optimized very specifically for web applications, websites. The difference here is that it is really optimized for getting up and running very, very quickly using familiar tools and deployment technologies. It can run websites using ASP.NET, of course. We also support Node.js and PHP. We recently announced support for Python and other fast CGI languages. And it allows you to deploy in seconds with FTP, Git, or the Web Deploy protocol from Visual Studio or WebMatrix. This is a little bit different deployment model, whereas before you had this package and you deployed it and it fired up dedicated virtual machines and set up the infrastructure for you. In websites, all of that is abstracted away even more. So in fact, the virtual machines that your application is running on and the instances are already up and running. They're sort of hot. And when you deploy your code, Windows Azure simply takes your code and deploys it to an existing instance. And this is a multi-tenanted solution. So by default, if you start with the free shared offer, and I'll describe the different offers here in a minute, you're going into a multi-tenant environment that's a high-density environment, and your site is running on hardware alongside other sites. We do, of course, smart routing and isolation to make sure everybody's site runs effectively. And you can do this for free up to 10 websites. Of course, because it's free, there's some sort of quotas in place where you can only have so much bandwidth and so much CPU utilization, et cetera. But for a lot of websites, sort of small websites that don't have a ton of traffic, this is a pretty good solution. And it allows you to really quickly update, and you can do git push and update your code in just seconds. So let me show you a little bit how this works. So I talked a little bit about the shared model. When you start and deploy your site, you'll see the little green smiley face. That's my website, okay? And I'm sitting in a pool of shared resources on a big virtual machine alongside a lot of other tenants who are the other blue squares. So my site is green. There are some other sites there. Now, if I need to be able to serve more traffic, I can actually scale up my little slices of the multi-tenanted environment. So I can get a little bit more quota, and I can service more requests per second if I want to scale up. So it's not scaling up to more instances or more virtual machines. It's scaling up to more sort of slices of a shared infrastructure. But if I decide that's not good enough, you know, I don't want to be on a multi-tenanted server. I want to have dedicated resources where I can actually see the exact CPU, the exact memory utilization, and have complete control over that. And I don't want any of my naughty neighbors chewing up all the CPU and hosing my customers. You have the ability to move to what's called reserved instances. When you move to reserved instances, now your website gets pushed over into its own dedicated virtual machine. And this happens for you automatically. So you can go from shared to reserved by literally clicking the box and saving. And all that will happen for you automatically. Your site gets moved out of the multi-tenant environment. A new virtual machine gets pulled over. It's already running, by the way. We have sort of this pool of warm virtual machines. So it pulls a new one in, sets up the routing schema, and puts your code on that new virtual machine. All that happens for you automatically. Now that you have your own virtual machine, you can also scale that up. So now I have two instances, like we did with cloud services, I can have two instances of dedicated virtual machines, and so on and so forth. So you can see there's some similarities there once you get into the reserved mode with the cloud services. Just the deployment model's a little bit different. Now, once you have dedicated virtual machines, you can also add additional sites, and those sites will share your virtual machines. So the interesting thing here, we're seeing a lot of customers very excited about this. And even a lot of IT professionals very excited about this. And the reason is a lot of folks have old legacy departmental type applications spread all over the place within the organization. You have some stuff running on old Windows Server 2000 boxes. You have some PHP apps running over here on Linux boxes. You have people running things under their desk. You have people running classic ASP apps from, 1999, running against Access databases or whatever. All this stuff spread all over the place. And what we're seeing is customers are responding to this because they can consolidate all of those little hodgepodge departmental apps, just copy all that code up here into Windows Azure websites, and now all of a sudden have those running in one single unified view where they can monitor and manage all of those things, even those old legacy ASP apps. We can run old school ASP even on this platform. So think about this from the point of view of consolidating and managing and getting your arms around all of those little one-off websites that are spread throughout your organization. So in addition to the sort of platform as a service cloud services for running applications and websites, for running websites, we have a whole bunch of these application building block services. And these are, you could think of them as tools. So rather than developers having to go off and figure out how to implement identity and integrate with Active Directory, or to figure out the OAuth exchange protocol to support Facebook IDs or Twitter IDs, we give you the tools with very simple APIs to hook into those types of systems so developers can get on with the business of writing business logic and developing, you know, cool apps that are driving, you know, profit for you rather than doing sort of plumbing work. So we have now a number of these. We have a big data offering now. We have Hadoop as a service running on top of Windows Azure, and this is in a preview mode. We have a database. So we have a SQL database for relational data. And this is a fully redundant, highly available SQL database that is owned and operated and managed by Microsoft. And it's called Windows Azure SQL Database, formerly known as SQL Azure. And that gives you the ability to literally, with a few clicks of the mouse, just say, I want a database. I want it to be 10 gigs. I want all the goodness of having, you know, high availability, reliability, backup, blah, blah, blah. But I don't want to have to set up my own SQL cluster. So Microsoft, who just so happens we understand SQL Server, do that for me and just give me the connection string. All I want is the connection string. I want to be able to store data in there and get my data out. You figure out all the complexity of managing that thing. And so SQL Azure Database gives you that. We have other storage systems. We have a key value store, sort of a NoSQL option called Windows Azure Tables. We have a service called Traffic Manager, which allows you to set up your own sort of load balancing and routing schema across geographically distributed instances of your app. So let's say, for example, when you deploy your app, you choose to deploy it into Europe. But you also want to have an instance of your application running in the United States or elsewhere in case of disaster recovery. Then you can set up Traffic Manager to route all incoming requests for your application to Europe unless that application instance becomes unavailable, then route traffic to Europe or to the United States. You can set up other rules like if somebody tries to hit my application, figure out where they are in the world and which instance of my application would actually have the lowest latency between that data center and the user, and then point them to that instance. So there's a number of different rule sets you can use with this Traffic Manager solution to set up smart routing schemas for your app. We have a caching system that is Memcache compatible, all fully implemented, so it's very, very easy to plug that into your app. Messaging systems for doing cross-boundary communication between application components. So if you want to run a hybrid scenario where you have some things running on-premises, some things running in the cloud, we have that. All of those things can share data between them. Identity systems, I talked a little bit about. There's a session later on today, I think right after this one, on Active Directory and Windows Azure. So I'd encourage you to attend that. Media services for ingestion, transcoding and encoding and streaming of media, video, CDN we talked about, and networking technology, which I'll talk a little bit more about. So all these are the sort of building blocks. And I put them in the first part here because we're talking about platform as a service, and a lot of people think of these services as sort of platform as a service type offerings. And all of these are exposed through simple APIs. Now, also back in June, when we announced the Windows Azure Websites Preview, we announced Windows Azure Virtual Machines Preview. This is our infrastructure as a service offering. We have put this together so that it can be the most flexible offering and really give you the most capability for building hybrid applications. And when we talked to customers, they told us you've got to have Windows and Linux support. So we announced in June we have both Windows and Linux support. And we also announced a service called Windows Azure Virtual Networking. And Windows Azure Virtual Networking allows you to create secure site-to-site connectivity between your existing data center and the public cloud. And if you think about it, what that gives you is effectively a data center without boundaries. So now all of a sudden, once you get this connection configured, you can set up subnets in the cloud that match those of your on-premises network or your existing data center. Then when you provision new virtual machines in the cloud, those virtual machines show up on your network just like any other virtual machine in your network. You can monitor and manage those things in the same way you do all your other virtual infrastructure. So this is a very powerful capability once you get that virtual networking connection set up. The other thing that was very important to us is to provide virtual machine portability. Now, because Windows Azure is based on the same hypervisor technology as Windows Server Hyper-V, we get that. We can move virtual machines from one place to the other. And the way that that's done is by actually using the VHD file format and simply taking the VHD file format, the file, and moving it up into your Windows Azure storage account. So once you've taken that VHD, moved it to your Windows Azure storage account, then you can rehydrate that virtual machine in the cloud. Now, because you can also create virtual machines directly in the cloud, and I'm going to show you that in a few minutes, the opposite is also true. If you create and configure a virtual machine in the cloud, and you want to bring that thing back down on premises, the same is true. You can simply shut it down, grab the VHD file from your Windows Azure storage account, and bring that back down into your existing data center. Now, because VHD is an open published specification, you can find it on Microsoft's website. The specification has also been put under Microsoft's open specification promise, so we've sort of given a license to all the intellectual property involved in that format. Anyone can sort of implement and use this format. So we have a lot of third parties out there now starting to implement VHD support. And what it means is you could take a virtual machine from Windows Azure and deliver that to a third-party cloud provider if you want to use multiple cloud providers or you want to move from Windows Azure at some point in the future. And what it means at the end of the day is there's no lock-in. So you're not locked into Windows Azure. You can always bring those things back down onto your existing on-premises infrastructure. If you want to use those with a third party, you can use them there. And there's really this portability layer that I think is pretty important. Now, one of the interesting things about our infrastructure as a service offering is that we did it after we did platform as a service. So you know there's a lot of infrastructure as a service companies out there doing that, Amazon, AWS, Rackspace. But we sort of did it the other way around. For good or for bad, we did it the other way around. And one of the benefits to doing that is that the storage system that we built for platform as a service is the same storage subsystem that's used for our infrastructure as a service. So when you write data into the data center in Windows Azure, if you're using the blob storage system, for example, that data is automatically replicated to multiple places in the data center. So every time you write a bit of data, it gets copied twice. So there's three copies of your data in the data center. So if a storage array goes down or a hard drive fails, there's two other copies of that data, and Windows Azure will automatically detect the failure, find clean storage somewhere, and create another extra third copy of the data. So you always have three copies of your data. And because we have this magic sort of built into the fabric, Windows Azure virtual machines with persistent drives are able to take advantage of that. So every time you write something, you install some software on your virtual machine or you write something to your C drive, you're writing it into the same storage subsystem that our cloud services uses, which means you automatically get multiple replica copies of your data. So if one of those hard drives fails, your virtual machine will simply automatically switch over and start reading and writing from one of the other instances of the disk, and you won't even notice. So that sort of failover happens automatically. In addition to that, multiple copies of your data in the data center, so this is something failed and went back on. So in addition to that, you can turn on what's called geo-replication. And this is just the click of a checkbox. And if you turn on geo-replication, what it means is instead of just those three copies of your data in the Windows Azure data center that you're getting, you're also getting a fourth copy of your data that is replicated to a data center that's at least 800 kilometers away from the other one. So if there's a hurricane, other type of natural disaster, there's always a fresh copy of your data waiting for you in that other data center. So this is just a click of a checkbox to turn this on. Of course, it costs a little bit more to store data that's geo-replicated, so that's a decision you need to make. But if you have super mission-critical data, this is something that you can do very, very easily. So now let's talk a little bit about hybrid concepts. Yes?
What about actual backups? Do you have a disaster recovery here, but you want to do backup of the data, preventing your administrator deleting stuff by an accident?
Mm-hmm.
So
the question is, how do you back up data to prevent accidental deletion or corruption from human error or programmatic error? So in this case, you are you're storing everything into your Windows Azure Blob Storage account. So everything is persisted in your Blob Storage account, which means you can programmatically take snapshots of that data at any time and store that somewhere else in your Windows Azure Storage account, or you can suck that down to your data center or put it anywhere. So there's always an open API for taking snapshots and moving data in and out. So you have complete flexibility about how you want to manage that data and build your own backup schema. So there's a lot of options there. Any other questions about cloud services, websites, or virtual machines before we start talking about hybrid concepts? Yes, sir. Great question. I can just repeat the questions for now. Thank you. So the question is the SQL database, Windows Azure SQL database, is that available to applications that are only running on Windows Azure, or can you just get a SQL database and connect it from anywhere? The answer is you can use it from anywhere. So you can provision that database, set it up. You have to set up the firewall rules so that endpoint is exposed outside of Windows Azure. So by default, you get it exposed to Windows Azure services. But if you want some other service from outside of Windows Azure data center to connect, you need to set up a firewall rule, which is very, very easy to do. Once you've done that, you can connect to that database from anywhere. Obviously, the downside of doing that is you're going to have internet latency between wherever your application is hosted and the SQL server. So you're going to have to deal with that. So there's, of course, a natural benefit of having those things co-located. Any other questions? All right, let's move on a little bit. So I talked a little bit about flexibility at the very beginning, and when we think about building hybrid solutions, we understand the challenges that you guys face, and there's really no one-size-fits-all solution. So, you know, obviously this is the everyday challenges for IT, driving greater IT efficiency, reducing time to solution. So the business is asking something of you, how do you do it faster, how do you do it quicker? Build that dynamic scalability so you're not spending money that doesn't need to be spent and you're not turning customers away when you need their revenue most. Balancing performance with cost and ensuring compliance. A lot of you probably have compliance issues. So how do we sort of balance all these things? Well, there's not a one-size-fits-all. And when we built this platform, we wanted to build ultimate flexibility so that you can build hybrid solutions that make the most sense for you. And so how do we define hybrid IT or hybrid solutions? It's very, very simple to me. There's traditional infrastructure, which is sort of the servers that are under people's desks or the non-virtualized instances of Windows or Linux that you have lying around. We have your private cloud installations or your virtualized infrastructure, and we have the public cloud. So there's those three different things. And a hybrid application is simply something that spans between them. So part of the application is running here, part of the application is running here, and these things are somehow sharing data or communicating. It's very simple. So to start with, when we built Windows Azure, we had a legacy of Windows Server and System Center, and we wanted to make sure that we could build great symmetry between the existing sort of on-premises infrastructure and the public cloud. And so that started by making sure we had this common layer between public and private. It starts with identity. This is about being able to leverage your existing identity investments in Active Directory and take those identities with you into Windows Azure. Furthermore, now being able to use Office 365 identities. If you're subscribing to Office 365, being able to carry that identity through to your applications running in both public and private cloud. Second is virtualization. We talked a lot about this already. Having that common hypervisor gives us a lot of flexibility in taking existing applications and workloads that are running and moving them to the cloud. If I want to free up some hardware, or you know, if I have a host machine here that I need to put something else on that really has to be on premises, but this other app that's running there can run just fine in the public cloud, I simply can move that VHD, no problem. Management. So we don't want, I don't think anybody wants to have a different experience for managing and monitoring applications that happen to be running in the public cloud versus those running in your data center. You want a common experience. You want to leverage the skills that people have already built in dealing with your existing infrastructure investments. So System Center gives you that capability through a single pane of glass. You can take advantage of the monitoring and management capabilities of System Center for both public and private cloud. And last but not least is development. This is about giving developers a common set of tools for creating applications for the public cloud, for the private cloud, for deploying applications. And this isn't just about .NET and Visual Studio. We've also done a ton of work with the Eclipse Foundation and other open source communities to build great Windows Azure experiences into those tool sets to ensure that developers who are used to those tools can take advantage of both their existing sort of on-premises stuff as well as Windows Azure in the public cloud. So there's a lot of work that's ongoing to make sure that we have a great experience on both sides for .NET developers, Java developers, PHP, Python, you name it. So building hybrid applications that sort of span all those things requires several different types of connectivity. And so I want to just walk you through what the different connectivity types that we've built are. I talked a little bit about Windows Azure Virtual Networking, and that's that secure site-to-site connectivity. So in order to get this working, it requires you to have a VPN device in your data center. And if you've got a VPN device already, which many of you probably do, all you need to do is go set up a virtual gateway on Windows Azure. Give it, you know, there's some key exchange and some other configuration that you need to do. But once that's set up, you basically have this infinitely scalable data center. And so that's what Windows Azure Virtual Networking is all about. It's breaking down the walls of your data center and giving you that scalability. Next is secure machine-to-machine connectivity. So what if you have an application that you want to run on the public cloud? It's a B2C type application or a B2B type application. And that application needs to access some piece of data that's in your existing data center. Maybe it's just a few tables off of a database or a document store somewhere. And you don't want to go through the headache of setting up this whole VPN connection because it's sort of a little bit overkill for what you're trying to do. You just have one specific need. What you can do is use something called Windows Azure Connect. And Windows Azure Connect is an agent-based service where you install this little agent that runs on a Windows server, and it will basically create an endpoint in the cloud, so anything that's running in the cloud can talk back through that endpoint and reach through your firewall to get to that data, to get to that machine and get to that data. So it's sort of a point-to-point thing. You know, this is something a developer could do on their own, frankly. In the case of the secure site-to-site connectivity with Windows Azure Virtual Networking, that requires an IT pro to really get in there who understands the network and set this thing up. Next is application layer. So if you have application components that are running in your existing data center and you want to share data or messages between other application components that are running in your own data center or in the public cloud, you can use our messaging layer, which is called Windows Azure Service Bus, to share those messages. And that's really a nice thing to do because you really have an endpoint in the cloud that everything can talk to. And once you get that set up and configured, you can actually move those various components around. And as long as they're all still pointing at that same service bus endpoint in the cloud, everything will continue to communicate and work. So it gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of how you roll out your hybrid solution and how you migrate things around in the future. And finally, data synchronization. We have something called, it was called SQL Data Sync. I think it was called SQL Azure Data Sync, and now I think it's just SQL Data Sync. This allows you to synchronize data real-time between multiple databases. These can be two databases in your data center. It can be between a database in your data center and a Windows Azure SQL database in the cloud. You can synchronize entire databases or just subsets of databases, particular information that you want to have available to customers or partners, or just as a backup disaster recovery type solution. You can set this up and get that automatic synchronization. So a lot of different ways to sort of build. These are the building blocks, if you will, for hybrid applications. So one example of what this might actually look like. Let's say for a minute you have a web application that's running in your data center. It's a departmental app of some kind. Or it may be something one of your partners is using. Let's say you have a little bit of third-party software in there. You have a SQL server, and you have authentication and authorization being done by Active Directory. One scenario here is you could set up, first and foremost, that Windows Azure Virtual Networking connection. So now all of a sudden, again, you have this sort of connection to this data center in the cloud, which is infinitely scalable. Once you've set that up, you could do something as simple as take the web tier and move that up into the cloud. You don't even have to change anything else. All of the code in the web tier is talking to host names or IP addresses of these other machines that are on your network. But once that virtual networking connection is configured, this machine can discover everything just like it always did. So that can continue to run. Now, if you do this, you're probably going to have a little bit of latency in the system. Let's say when users try to log on, it's taking a little bit longer than you'd like because there's latency. What you could do is actually do a replica, like throw a new virtual machine up in the cloud and set up a replica domain controller up there. So now your web application can authenticate against that local domain controller that's sitting up in the cloud rather than having to go back through this VPN connection every time to authenticate. So you get a little bit of latency. Then later on, you could move the third-party components out there as well if you're suited. But let's say you have a compliance issue where you're not actually allowed to move that data into the public cloud for some reason, some security issue, or you're doing business with the public sector, or there's some reason that you can't move that data. No problem. You can leave the data on premises in your data center how it is and just deploy the components to the public cloud that you feel comfortable with and that you feel safe about. And everything will just continue to work as it always has. So there's some different flexibility options here. So I'm just going to take a few minutes here and just show you what it actually looks like to spin up a new virtual machine in Windows Azure and show you how easy that is. See how we're doing on time. All right. So here I have the Windows Azure Management Portal. Any show of hands of anyone who's already played with Windows Azure? I should have probably asked that at the beginning. Okay. So you guys are probably seriously bored. Hopefully I'm telling you some new things. I don't know. So this is the new Windows Azure Management Portal that we released back in June. It is totally HTML5 based. It renders quite nicely across a multitude of devices. The old one was based on Silverlight, which did not render nicely across a multitude of devices. So for those of you who used that one, my condolences, and I appreciate your sticking with us until we got something useful. So what this management portal is effectively a dashboard for you for all of your Windows Azure services. So you'll see down the left-hand side, websites, virtual machines, mobile services, which is something we just announced. Mobile services is a way to easily create backends for rich mobile applications on Windows 8 and iOS, and we're going to roll out Android and Windows Phone 8 soon. So all this stuff's sort of here, and you'll see I'm on the Virtual Machines tab, and that shows me what are the virtual machines I have running. So I have one virtual machine running here called Craig WinVM. It's running. I can dig into it here, take a look. I get a nice little dashboard view. And I just created this one this morning, so there's probably not a lot of traffic to date on it, but you can see these things are loading. So there's sort of what the traffic's look like throughout the morning of me just RDPing into the machine or whatever. Right now it has one core, and there's my OS disk. So that shows me where's the VHD file for this virtual machine actually persisting and what's it called, so I can go get to it. Over on the right-hand side here, you'll see here's the public IP address for this thing. Here's the DNS name that was assigned to me when I created this. So if I want to go put a custom domain over the top of that, I can just go do a CNAME or an A record with my DNS. And so all that information's here. Now if I want to connect to this thing from the Windows Azure portal, all I need to do, you see this connect button down here, all I need to do is click that. And what that's going to do is download to my local machine a .rdp file. And the .rdp file is going to give my remote desktop client all the information it needs to connect to that virtual machine. Basically the IP address and the port. So I'm just going to go ahead and say open. I'm going to log in with the password that I set when I created this thing. And in just a few seconds, hopefully, we'll be remoted into that virtual machine. You can see it brings you right to the first time you load it up, brings up the server manager so you can set up roles and configure your server. So it's just that easy. Now let me show you how easy it is to actually create this thing. So when I'm on the, let me go back here, on the virtual machines tab, all I need to do is say new. And because I'm on the virtual machines tab, it kind of selects the next few options for me. It says, oh, I assume you want compute and you want a virtual machine because you're on the virtual machines tab when you click new. In fact, I could go create other things from here, but it assumed correctly. Now I have two options. I can do a quick create, which is really doesn't give me a lot of options in terms of how I configure my virtual machine. Or I can go from gallery and select from a number of images. In the gallery today, we have Windows Server images, we have a SQL Server image, we have a BizTalk Server image, and we have a handful of Linux images, including CentOS, SUSE, and Ubuntu. And more images will be coming in the future. So let's just create a quick Windows one. So let's call it Campus Days VM, and hopefully that one's not taken. So it's doing a little check here to make sure nobody's taken that DNS name. So I can select my my image that I want. I can select the size of my virtual machine, number of cores, memory, etc. I'm just going to go ahead and say medium, and I'm going to set the password. And then the location where I want to deploy this thing. So I have the option of East US, West US, East Asia, Southeast Asia, North Europe, West Europe. So let's select North Europe because it's probably going to work the best. And then I click Create Virtual Machine, and that's it. And this thing will take a few minutes to create, about 5 or 6 minutes. If you create a Linux virtual machine, the Linux ones only take, I think, 3 minutes or something like that. There's some extra reboot that's required in the provisioning of the Windows one, rather. But we're continually working on this. So this service is in preview right now, and we're continually working on the performance to try to get those initialization times down so that we can get these things going even faster. So that's all it takes to get a virtual machine running. Let's see, anything else cool I can show you here in the portal? Let me just open it up for questions right now. I think we're running kind of hot on time. Yes, sir? Any kind of great question. The question was, can you do any kind of scripting to create these VMs? So with this new fancy HTML5-based management portal, what we're actually doing is calling into our own APIs. So everything you can do through this web interface, you can do programmatically through APIs. So at Microsoft, we say we're eating our own dog food there, making sure the APIs are the right APIs and that they're working and all of that kind of stuff. So the great thing is you can absolutely programmatically create and destroy VMs, check up on the health of your cloud services, your virtual machines, poke into all of the monitoring tools that are there and look at all that data. All of that's available through APIs. And by the way, all of our APIs, we have SDKs for them for .NET, Python, PHP, Java. I'm missing one, Node.js. So those are kind of libraries that give developers speed dial into all of those services. We have command line tools not only for PowerShell, but also for Mac, for Linux, they'll run in Bash. It's basically running on a Node.js runtime, so they'll run in any environment that'll run Node.js. So we're really trying to make this a great cross-platform experience for any type of developer, not just sort of the standard Microsoft.NET developers. And for those folks who want to use something completely different that's not one of those languages that I mentioned, all of these APIs are RESTful APIs. They're all exposed over HTTP, et cetera. So any language, any tool that can speak HTTP, which is just about anything, can use and consume all of these APIs as well. Did you have another question?
Yeah, what about the System Center Suite? You said earlier on that you use the System Center Suite, the VMM and the NCCM, and that, how do you integrate that into your cloud-based virtual machines?
So they're just virtual machines. They have an IP address. So you connect
them normally into
there. Exactly. Yes, sir. Yes, either way. So you could either back up, you could snapshot the VHD, or you can install the backup agent and back it up that way.
Can you do it from the dev portal?
Yes, let's see. I think I just go here and I click capture. Let's see. I think I have to, let me see. There is a way to do a running snapshot. And I can't remember how to do it off the top of my head. If you have to do it, you might have to do it from the storage account or you do it here. I can't remember, but follow up with me after and I'll figure it out and I'll show you. There is a way to do it. Exactly. You can roll back to any point in time in the future. I mean, you're consuming a lot of storage every time you do that because you're taking a full, you know, a full copy of that VHD file. So depending upon how big it is, you know, you want to be cognizant of that, just aware of what you're doing, because that storage, you pay basically, you know, by the gigabyte for storage. And you're paying basically the standard blob storage rates for storing those VHDs. Yes, sir. Tips for doing backup of right. So we have some specific resources on best practices for doing backup. There's really no backup that's exactly the same as the way you've always done backup with SQL Server, and this has been a pain point for customers for a couple of years. But we just rolled out, I think, a white paper that has a bunch of different recommendations there. So if you follow up with me after, I'll find that resource for you. I'm not the best person to ask about that, but I know something just came, so we can give you the right data. All right, let me see. I think that may be all of the slides I have. Let me see. There's a couple more things. We talked a little bit about Traffic Manager. This is the ability to do your own sort of load balancing routing schema over the top of multiple instances of your app. In fact, one scenario that I've seen with this is people actually running their application in multiple cloud providers and setting up Windows Azure Traffic Manager over the top of that. So let's say, for example, you want to run something in Azure, you want to run something in Amazon AWS, just to reduce your risk or whatever, or if you're not comfortable with one or the other, you can set this up to actually do that. So there's a lot of different flexibility in this service, and you can really configure it to do a lot of interesting things. There's a new service that we rolled out with the announcement of Windows Server 2012, which is the Windows Azure Online Backup. So it's an agent-based backup you can set up in Windows Server 2012 to do your backups into the cloud. And that's very easy to configure and set up. So if you're interested in that, I can point you in the right direction. Windows Azure is now rolled out across 89 countries. I think last year it was less than half of that, so this is kind of a big rollout. The primary issue with rolling out to new countries is, you know, currency exchange and tax and all of that. So thankfully we're able to get all of that resolved. And that's about it. So if you haven't played with it yet, I encourage you to go sign up. It's 90 days free trial. So anyone can go sign up. Anyone can get 90 days free. They will, I think, ask for a credit card for that 90-day free trial, but it will not charge you. You cannot go over and you cannot get charged if you're in a free trial subscription. The only reason they need the credit card is for fraud protection, to make sure you're not a hacker or a bot or something like that. So don't worry, if you put in your credit card, you will not be charged. And if you ever get charged, you can tell them I said that. But I assure you it won't happen. So check out windowsazure.com. All the tools and resources are there. There's a lot of different articles and tutorials about how to do certain things. And all the development resources are there. If you're a developer, check that out and check out some of the tutorials and play with it. Spin up some VMs and try it out. Yes, sir. Sure, great question. The question is one about trust. If you're going to actually move, you know, production stuff up to Windows Azure, you want to be able to make sure that we have certain levels of security, and where can you find out more information about that? Did I appropriately frame? So we have something called the Windows Azure Trust Center. So if you go to windowsazure.com, there's a link at the top called Trust Center. And in the Windows Azure Trust Center, we outline very, very specifically what are all the compliance certifications and, you know, security auditing processes that we participate in, and where we are in terms of all those different security audits and compliance procedures. So you can see what are all the services within Windows Azure that are subject to the various different certifications, and which ones we've already got received and which ones we haven't, and then there's a bunch of other ancillary information. So I encourage you to check that out, because that's probably going to be your best resource. And I think there's also a way on there to email in if you have another question, or if there's some other certification or compliance that your business requires that we're not looking at right now. Please let us know what that is, and we'll add that into the process, because we want to make sure that that you have that confidence and that you can do that. One other thing I want to underscore that I just realized is, again, virtual machines and the website services are in preview mode right now. So you can think of this as a beta. And what it means is we don't have the full 99.95 SLA until we move into general availability sometime in the near future. So right now, it's a good time to go play with it, try it out, do prototypes, mess around. And if you do want to go beyond what you get with your free trial, you can do that. You can take the spending limit off and spin up more virtual machines and do more things. And if you do that, you'll get a discount on those virtual machines. I think it's like 60 cents on the dollar, so 40% discount while we're in this preview mode. But understand, if you're using those resources, you don't have a full SLA, so they could go down. Things could happen. It usually doesn't, but just so you know, you don't want to go put your biggest mission critical production workloads out there while we're still in preview. Please wait until general availability before you do that. So I just want to make sure that that's clear. But if you do have things, dev test environments, other non-critical departmental apps that you want to move out there, that's a great way to try it out, and you can do so at a reduced cost. So give it a shot and let us know what you think. With that, my email is ckitter, C-K-I-T-T-E-R, at Microsoft. And if you have any questions, please feel free to see me after, and we can follow up also over email. So thanks a lot.